all its giant, shiny glory. The harvester backed up to the hopper, latched into place, and slowly raised the front of its basin. Thousands of kilograms of ore tumbled into the hopper. A brief cloud of dust accompanied the avalanche, but almost immediately disappeared. No air to keep it afloat. Having taken a good dump, the basin returned to level and the harvester sat idle. Mechanical arms reached out to attach the charging cable and coolant lines. I wasn't sure how long it would take to recharge, but I wasted no time. 1 million slugs, I said. I climbed up the side of the harvester and threw my gear into the basin. Then I dropped into the basin myself. Easy enough. I expected a long wait during the recharge, but it only took 5 minutes. I have to hand it to Toyota. They know how to make rapid recharge batteries. The harvester lurched forward, and just like that, we were on our way. My plan was working. I giggled like a little girl. Hey, I'm a girl, so I'm allowed. And besides, no one was watching. I pulled an aluminum stock rod from the duffel, climbed to the top of the harvester, and held it out like a sword. Onward, mighty steed! Onward we went. The harvester headed southwest toward the Moltke foothills at the breakneck speed of 5 kilometers per hour. I watched the smelter bubble and reactors disappear in the distance and grew uneasy again. Don't get me wrong, this wasn't the farthest I'd been from the Shire or anything. The train to the visitor center is over 40 kilometers. But this was the farthest I'd ever been from safety. The landscape grew rocky and jagged as we entered the foothills. The harvester didn't even slow down. It might not have been fast, but damn, it had torque. We hit the first of many boulders, and I almost flew out the basin. I barely kept all my gear inside. Harvesters are not luxury cars. How did the rocks even stay put on the trip back? The harvesters must have been a little more cautious on their way home. Still, the bumpy ride was better than walking. That incline would have killed me. Finally, we leveled off and things got smooth again. I pushed the duffel off of me and climbed back to the top. We'd made it to the collection zone. The wide, flat plain had been denuded of rocks over years of harvesting. Good. Finally, some smooth sailing. The cleared area was roughly a circle. I spotted 3 other harvesters at the clearing's edge, scooping rocks into their basins. My harvester rumbled to the edge and dropped its scoop. I tossed my gear out of the basin and hopped after it. At this point, there was no way to avoid nav cameras. I just had to hope some Sanchez employee hadn't randomly decided to bring up the feeds to impress his girlfriend. I collected the gear and dragged it under the harvester with me. The first step was to attach myself on my gear to the undercarriage. Harvesters don't stay still for long, and I didn't want to scurry after it. I upended the duffel to prep my equipment. First was the tarp. It was heavy, fiber-reinforced plastic with grommets in the corner so you could tie it down. I laced nylon rope through the grommets and affixed it to some jack points on the hull. Now, I had a hammock. I crawled into my new secret lair and pulled my welding equipment up with me. The harvester lurched forward. I guess it had loaded some rocks into its basin and decided to move forward for another bite. I had no warning because, hey, no sound. A minor inconvenience. I hadn't loaded the spare oxygen tanks into my hammock yet. I looked over to the spare tanks. Okay, not the end of the world. I could come back later to a huge boulder destabilized by the fresh hole at its base tipped forward onto the tanks. A pathetic fart of air escaped from underneath, briefly kicking up dust. Then there was nothing. And that was the end of my reserve air tanks. Oh, come on! I yelled. I took a moment to calculate how fucked I was. I checked my arm readout. 6 hours of oxygen left in the main supply. 2 more hours in the emergency reserve. I had another tank for welding. I could attach it to my suit's universal valve, but that would defeat the purpose of the whole trip. I needed that oxygen for my nefarious plans. So, 8 hours of breathable air. Was this still doable? Artemis was 3 kilometers away. The trip had a lot of rough terrain, but it was also downhill. Call it 2 hours. My original plan had been to wait until night, clock night, I mean not actual lunar night, and then sneak in when everyone was asleep, but I didn't have enough air to wait that long. I'd have to enter in the middle of the day. New plan. The ISRO airlock. It led into Space Agency Row and Armstrong Bubble. There'd be a few confused nerds and someone might say, but I just keep walking. With the sun visor down, no one would see my face. And, unlike the Conrad airlock, it wouldn't be littered with EVA masters. Okay, problem sort of solved. That meant I had 6 hours before I had to leave the collection area. 90 minutes per harvester. Time to hustle. I got as comfortable as I could in my hammock and assembled the welding gear. I laid the acetylene and oxygen tanks between my legs to keep them stable. On the harvester's undercarriage, I eyeballed 10 centimeters from the coolant valve and scratched a 3-centimeter circle there with a screwdriver. That's where I had to cut. I flipped down my helmet sun visor. I duct taped a welding lens shade to the middle. I cranked the acetylene valve, set the torch mixture to ignition mode, sparked it, and it didn't start. I tried again. Nothing. Not even sparks. I checked the acetylene tank. No flow problems. What the hell? I flipped up the visor and inspected the sparker. Dad taught me to use a flint sparker because an electric one is another thing to break. It was just a piece of flint and steel grooves attached to a springy handle. Nothing complicated about it. This was 1,000-year-old technology we're talking about here. Why wasn't it working? Oh, right. When flint strikes steel, it knocks microscopic flecks of metal into the air. The metal burns because of some complicated crap related to surface area and oxidization rates. Basically, it rusts so fast that the reaction heat makes fire. Fun fact, oxidizing requires oxygen. Flint and steel won't work in a vacuum. All right, no need to panic. A welding flame is just acetylene and oxygen on fire. I adjusted the valves and set the mixture to be a trickle of acetylene amongst a torrent of oxygen. Then I scraped the sparker right in front of the nozzle. Sparks! Boy, did they ever fly! That oxygen made the metal flex go apeshit. But I'd got too far. There wasn't enough acetylene to ignite the flame itself. I added a bit more to the mix and tried again. This time, the shower of sparks managed to light a sputtering, inconsistent flame. I spun the valves back to a normal mix and the flame settled into a familiar, stable shape. I breathed a sigh of relief and flipped my visor down. I held the torch steady despite the clunky EVA suit. Pain in the ass, but at least I didn't have to deal with molten metal. This was a cut, not a join. When you cut, you aren't melting metal. You actually turn it into an oxidized gas. Yeah, it's that hot. The actual cutting was a lot easier than I expected. It took less than a minute. The little 3-centimeter circle of steel plopped down in my chest, followed by a blob of molten wax. The wax bubbled and rehardened almost instantly. My positioning was perfect. I'd cut into the wax reservoir without nicking the coolant lines nearby. I didn't care about the health of the coolant system, but I didn't want the harvester to call home about a coolant leak. The small daub of wax that fell on me wouldn't be enough loss to worry the harvester. At least I hope not. I pulled a pressure valve from my duffel. I'd bought 6 of them from Tranquility Bay Hardware the day before, 1 per harvester and 2 spares. Standard pressure connector on one side, 3 centimeters raw pipe on the other. I jammed the connector into the hole. I'd done well on my cut. It was a snug fit. I fired up the torch again with the same oxygen crazy ignition mix as last time and grabbed a rod of stock aluminum. I needed a strong, airtight seal around the valve. I'd done 1,000,000 valve installations with Dad as a kid, but never in an EVA suit. And unlike the cut, this time I was melting stock metal to make a seal. If I screwed up, a blob of molten metal would fall on me and bore a hole straight through my suit. Holes in EVA suits are bad. I got as far to the side as I could. If I screwed up, maybe the aluminum droplet of doom would miss me. I got to work and watched the aluminum puddle grow. The droplet trembled along the weld site, then finally seeped upward into the crack above it. My heartbeat returned to somewhere near normal. Thank God for surface tension and capillary action. I was careful and took my time. I worked around the valve slowly, trying to keep my body from being directly underneath. Finally, I finished the deed. I'd installed a pressure valve into the wax reservoir. Now it was time for the dastardly part of my plan. I attached the line from my welding oxygen tank to the valve and cranked the flow to full. Sure, the reservoir was full of wax, but there were gaps. And believe me, when you blow 50 atmospheres of air into a pressure vessel, it finds the gaps. Once the tank equalized with the compartment, I very carefully closed the valve and disconnected the tank line. I slid out from under the harvester. I watched it for a second to make sure the damn thing wasn't about to move. I don't like making the same mistake twice. The scoop crunched forward, grabbed a few hundred rocks, and dropped them in the basin. It reached down for another bite. Okay, I had time to climb aboard. I hopped on the nearby wheel and hoisted myself onto the frame. I reached the breaker box and opened the little door. Inside, it was just like Tron's harvester's breaker box, with the same four lines connecting to it. Not a surprise, they were the same model. Still, I unclenched a little upon seeing it. Harvesters have breakers all over to stave off electrical problems, but the last line of defense is the main breaker. All power runs through it. It's the fuse that protects the battery. I pulled a homemade contraption from my duffel. It consisted of two jumper cable clamps on thick gauge wire, which led to a high-voltage relay switch. The relay was wired into the buzzer on a battery-powered alarm clock. Simple as that. The relay would trip when the clock's alarm went off. Not exactly rocket science, and it sure as hell wasn't pretty, but it would work. I connected the positive and negative poles of the main power line with my contraption. Nothing happened, of course. The relay was open. But once the alarm went off, set for midnight that evening, the relay would close and the battery would short out, and the short would bypass the breaker box entirely, so the normal fail-safes wouldn't work. When you short out a 2.4 megawatt hour battery, it gets very, very hot, like extremely hot. And it'd be sitting in a sealed reservoir full of wax and compressed oxygen, and the reservoir was an airtight compartment. Let me give you the math on that. Wax plus oxygen plus heat equals fire. Fire plus confined volume equals bomb. Bomb plus harvester times 4 equals 1 million slugs for Jazz. And it would happen long after I had safely returned to town. They could look as closely as they wanted at the video footage. They wouldn't know who I was, and I had another trick up my sleeve. I checked my arm readouts. I had to hope Svoboda's device worked as advertised. He'd never failed me before, at least. Back in my coffin, the device Svoboda had made for me would be powering up. I affectionately named it the Alibi-O-Mat. I'd slotted my gizmo into it before I'd gone on this little adventure. The Alibi-O-Mat poked at my gizmo screen with little probes that had the same capacitance as a human finger. It typed in my passcode and started surfing the internet. It brought up my favorite Saudi gossip websites, some funny videos, and a few internet forums. It even fired off some emails I'd composed in advance. Not the perfect alibi, but it was pretty good. If anyone asked where I was, I'd say I was at home surfing the internet. Hardly an uncommon thing to do. And the data logs from my gizmo in the city's network would back that up. I checked the time. The whole procedure, from attaching the hammock to installing my harvester-killing device, had taken 41 minutes. This was doable. I'd make it back in plenty of time. One harvester down, 3 to go. I crawled back under the now-doomed harvester, collected my gear, and crawled back out. All the while, I was careful not to get crushed by the giant wheels. Even in lunar gravity, the harvester was heavy enough to squish me like a grape. I assumed the next harvester would be 100 meters away or so on some other edge of the collection zone. But instead, it was 3 meters from my face. What the hell was it doing there? It didn't dig. It didn't load. It just looked at me. Its high-resolution cameras refocused slightly as I stood up. It could only mean one thing. Someone at Sanchez Aluminum had taken manual control of this harvester. They'd spotted me.
Dear Jazz, I am very worried about you. I haven't heard from you in over a month. You haven't answered any of my emails. I found your father's email address through his welding business website and contacted him. He doesn't know where you are, and he's very worried too. Artemis's public contact directory has 7 people named Sean. I contacted all of them, and none are the Sean who knows you. I guess your Sean didn't want his information public. Anyway, that was a dead end, too.
Dear Kelvin, Sorry you got worried. I wish you hadn't contacted Dad. Things have not gone well lately. Last month, Sean got a visit from an angry mob, about 15 guys. They beat the shit out of him. He wouldn't talk about it afterward, but I knew what it was about. It's a thing people do here. It's called a morals brigade. Some things really piss people off. Enough that they'll form up and punish you, even though you didn't break any laws. Sean is a horny guy. I knew that. And I knew he had other girls. But I didn't know he was screwing a 14-year-old. We've got people from all over Earth here. Different cultures have very different sexual morals. So Artemis doesn't have age of consent rules at all. As long as it's not forced, it's not rape. And the girl was consenting. But we're not savages here. You might not get deported to Earth, but you'll definitely get your ass kicked. I assume some of those guys were the girl's relatives. I don't know. I'm an idiot, Kelvin. A complete idiot. How could I not see what Sean was? I'm only 17, and he was hot for me from day one. Turns out I'm on the older end of his preference range. I've got nowhere to stay. I can't go back to Dad. I just can't. The fire destroyed all that equipment he'd bought, and he had to pay for the damage to the room itself. Now he can't expand the business at all. Hell, he can barely keep afloat. How can I go crawling back after doing something like that? I ruined my father with my stupidity. And I ruined myself, too, by the way. When I walked out on Sean, I had a couple hundred slugs to my name. I couldn't rent a room with that. I couldn't even eat proper food. I'm living on gunk. Every day. Unflavored because I can't afford extracts. And, oh God, Kelvin. I don't have anywhere to live. I sleep where I can. Areas without a lot of people in them. High floors where it's god-awful hot or low floors where it's freezing. I stole a blanket from a hotel laundry room just to have something to sleep under. I have to keep moving every night to stay a step ahead of Rudy. It's against the rules to be homeless. And he's been gunning for me since the fire. He'll use any excuse he can to get rid of me. If he catches me, I'll get deported to Saudi Arabia. Then I'll be broke, homeless, and have gravity sickness. I have to stay here. I'm sorry to dump all this on you. I just don't have anyone else to talk to. Do not offer me money. I know that'll be your first instinct, but don't. You have four sisters and two parents to take care of. Dear Jazz, I don't know what to say. I'm devastated. I wish I could do something for you. Things haven't been great here, either. My sister, Halima, announced that she's pregnant. The father is apparently a military man of some kind, and she doesn't even know his last name. There's going to be a baby to take care of soon, and it throws a wrench into all our plans. Originally, I was going to pay for Halima's education, then she'd pay for Cookie's education while I saved up money for Mom and Dad's retirement. Then Cookie would pay for Faith's education, and so on. But now Halima won't be doing anything but taking care of her baby, and we'll have to fund her. Mom got a job as a clerk at a grocery store on the KSC campus. It's the first job she's had in her life. She seems to like it, but I wish she didn't have to work at all. Dad will have to work many more years. Cookie is now saying she'll get an unskilled labor job somewhere to bring in money. But she's selling her future. We should count our blessings. Halima will be a good mother, and my family will soon have a new child to cherish. We are all healthy, and we have each other. You may be homeless, but at least it's in the relatively clean, safe streets of Artemis instead of some Earth city. You have a job, and are making some money. Hopefully more than you are spending. Difficult times, my friend, but there is a path. There must be. We will find it. Let me know if there's anything I can do to help you. Chapter 6. Okay, this is some bullshit, I said to the harvester. The other two harvesters also rolled toward me. probably to make sure I couldn't hide behind a rock to get away. Their controllers now had me on camera from multiple angles. I later learned what had happened. The boulder that murdered my air tanks made quite a thump. The harvester felt the tremor. They have very sensitive equipment in their wheels to detect ground vibration. Why? Because they dig on mountainsides. If there's an avalanche brewing, the controllers want to know right away. So the harvester called home to report the tremor. Back at Sanchez's control center, workers checked the previous couple minutes' video. They wanted to know if a wall of stony death was about to eat their multi-million slug harvester. Guess what they saw? Me disappearing into the undercarriage. So they sent another harvester to see what the hell I was up to. Then they called the EVA masters. I don't know exactly how the conversation went, but I assume it was something like this. Sanchez controllers, hey, why are you fucking with our harvester? EVA masters, we're not. Sanchez, well, someone is. EVA masters, we'll go kick their ass. Not because we care about you, but because we want to continue our stranglehold monopoly on EVAs. Also, we're a bunch of assholes. So, right now, the EVA masters were forming a posse to drag me back to Artemis. After that would come beatings, deportation, gravity sickness in Riyadh, and things generally going downhill from there. I stopped to think about this new situation. There was no way I'd get back into town before an angry mob of EVA masters came out looking for me. So there was no point in aborting. May as well finish the job before the epic game of lunar hide and seek began. The posse would use a freight rover for fast travel. They can go 10 kilometers per hour. The uphill climb would slow them a bit. Call it 6 kilometers per hour. I had a half hour before they arrived. Subtlety time was over. My plan to make shit happen after I got home was gone. Sanchez would recall all the harvesters for inspection. Mechanics would then go over each one with a fine-tooth comb and undo my hard work. I had to permanently destroy all 4 harvesters within the next 30 minutes. On the plus side, Sanchez's controllers had been kind enough to put them all next to me. Okay, first things first. I grabbed a pair of wire cutters from my duffel, leapt onto the harvester that spotted me, and clambered to the top. The primary and secondary comm systems were both mounted to the highest point of the cab for maximum range. The harvester, now under human control no doubt, shimmied forward and back, probably trying to shake me off. But harvesters just aren't very fast. I kept my balance easily and made short work of all 4 antennas. They were a little thicker than the wire cutters were designed for, but I got it done. It stopped dead as soon as the 4th antenna dropped. Harvesters are programmed to sit idle if they lose connection. You wouldn't want your harvester wandering around on its own, right? I leapt directly to the roof of the next harvester over, the one I just meticulously turned into a time bomb. All that work for nothing. Sigh. Snip, 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 snip. The other 2 harvesters backed away. Oh, no, you don't, I said. I leapt from the roof and hit the ground running. I caught up with ease. I climbed to the top of my 3rd victim and got to snipping. Like its brethren, it stopped dead as soon as the last antenna was gone. I had a bit of a run to catch up to the last one, but I got there soon enough. I snipped 3 of the antennas and was just about to get to the 4th when my left side exploded with pain and I flew through the air. Well, not air. Vacuum. You know what I mean. I smacked into the ground and rolled. What? I said. It took me a second, but I realized what happened. Those ass wipes at Sanchez had made the harvester smack me with its front loader scoop. Sons of bitches! That could have ruptured my suit. Sure, I was trashing their property, but you don't kill someone for that, do you? Oh, it was on. The harvester dropped its scoop halfway down and rolled toward me. I got to my feet, ran in front of the main camera, and flipped it my middle finger. Then I bashed it with the cutters in my other hand. No more visual data for you, assholes. Whoever you are, we know you're out there. I heard over the main EVA channel. It was Bob Lewis. Damn it. Of course the guild would send their most skilled member to lead the posse. Don't make this hard. If we have to physically restrain you, risking our safety, we'll make you pay for it. He had a point. Contrary to space movies, fighting in an EVA suit is monumentally dangerous. I had no intention of doing that. If they caught up to me, I'd just surrender. This had become a game of tag. One problem at a time. I still had Killdozer to deal with. Without the front camera, it flailed around trying to find me. The wheels might not move fast, but the raw power behind that scoop could really whip it back and forth. The scoop slammed to the ground a meter to my left. Pretty good guess, but not good enough. I hopped into the scoop and crouched down. I was taking a gamble here. The scoop had very accurate weight sensors, and my mass would surely be detected. I hoped the controller wasn't paying enough attention. The scoop reared up again, and when it did, I leapt. Between my leap and the scoop's upward motion, I went way the hell higher than I'd intended. "Well, shit," I said as I reached the top of the arc. I think I was about 10 meters off the ground, but I'll never know for sure. I do know that when I landed on the harvester's roof, I damn near broke my legs. After a moment of reflection on the wisdom of my plan, I reached over and snipped the remaining antenna. The harvester stopped thrashing instantly. Phew. I temporarily disabled all four harvesters. Now to permanently disable them. I started with the harvester that I'd already sabotaged. I climbed up the side as I had done before and opened the breaker box. I reached into my relay box and pawed at the alarm settings on the clock. I couldn't press the buttons, of course. The clock was designed for use by human fingers, not ham-fisted EVA gloves. Okay. If I couldn't set the alarm time, I'd use a less subtle approach. I disconnected both alligator clips, yanked the relay out from between them, and cut the insulation off their cables. I tied the cables into a crude knot and reconnected the alligator clips to the battery poles. Then I hauled ass! By removing the relay, I'd created a new device known as a wire. The battery was shorted and was absolutely shitting heat. I ran full speed to the nearest boulder and slid behind it. Nothing happened right away. I peeked around the edge. Still nothing. I said, maybe I should. Then the harvester exploded. Like, exploded. Way the hell larger than I expected. Shrapnel flew in all directions. The blast forced the chassis into the ground so hard it bounced up, did a half flip, and landed on its roof. I thought it was far enough from the explosion, but no, not even close. Chunks of twisted metal bashed my boulder while smaller bits of wreckage rained from above. Oh, right, I said. I'd forgotten to account for the other explosive in there, the hydrogen fuel cell battery. All that hydrogen had met the oxygen at high temperature, and they'd had a brief chat. The rock shielded me from the initial blast, but it was useless against the debris that came down from above. I belly crawled to one of the other harvesters while tufts of dust erupted around me. Reminder, there's no air here. If something gets flung into the sky, it comes back down as fast as if it was going when it left. It was raining bullets. Through pure luck, I made it to the harvester and cowered under it for a while. I waited until the storm abated and crawled out to check my handiwork. The victim harvester was totaled. Hell, you could barely tell it used to be a vehicle. The chassis was a wreck of twisted metal, and a good 50% of the harvester was now evenly distributed across the collection zone. I checked the time. The whole process had taken 10 minutes. Not bad, but I'd have to speed things up for the other three. First, though, I picked through the wreckage, found a sheet of metal about 2 meters square, and dragged it to the far side of my boulder of protection. I leaned it against the edge to make a rudimentary shelter. There. Technically, I'd made a moon base. I sat in Fort Jasmine for a few minutes, converting my other relay cables to simple jumpers. Then I got to work on the second harvester. At least this time there was no need for a hammock. The harvester wouldn't be going anywhere. Now that I had the hang of firing up a torch in a vacuum, things went much faster. Also, I didn't bother marking the site first, I just did it from memory. Nothing quite like experience to speed your hand. I cut the hole, installed the valve, and filled the reservoir with air. Then I shorted the battery, ran to my metal plate, crawled under it, and waited. And this time, I didn't look back like a moron. I felt the explosion through the ground and readied myself for the reign of terror. Would the metal plate be thick enough? Dents appeared in the plate, scary as hell, but it protected me from the hail. I waited until the dents stopped and checked the ground nearby to see if the puffs of dust had stopped. It would have been better if I could just hear things. Vacuum's refusal to convey sound is a real pain in the ass. I crept out and nothing killed me, so everything seemed to be in order. I came around the rock to see another demolished harvester. I checked the time on my arm readouts. Another 10 minutes had passed. Damn it! If the posse was efficient, they'd be on site in another 10 minutes. I still had 2 more harvesters to trash. If I left either of them operational, Sanchez Aluminum would still be able to get ore, still be able to make oxygen, and Trond would be keeping that 1,000,000 slugs. The biggest time sink was when I had to run and hide from the debris. I knew what I had to do. I just didn't like it. I'd have to blow the remaining 2 at the same time. Please don't quote that last sentence out of context. I prepared each of the remaining harvesters for kaboominess. Both were now full of oxygen, their breaker boxes open, and my jumper cables dangling from their positive poles. I laid all the welding equipment under one of the harvesters. Now that I was in a hurry, I wouldn't be able to drag all that shit home with me. But I couldn't leave stuff with Bashara Welding Company written all over it for people to find. 1,000,000 slugs. I'd buy him new stuff. Better stuff. I stood at one harvester and looked to the other 20 meters away. This would be tricky. A long-forgotten rational part of my brain piped up. Was this really a good idea? 1,000,000 slugs. Yep, I'm fine. I shorted out one battery, ran to the other harvester and shorted it too. I almost made it back to the shelter before the first one blew. Almost. The landscape ahead flashed bright with the blast. Tufts of dust burst around me as harvester bits diligently obeyed the laws of physics. No time to go around the boulder. I half-climbed, half-leapt over it. I tried for a graceful tuck and roll, but ended up with more of a flail and flop. "Did you see that?" came a voice over the radio. "You're broadcasting on Maine," said Bob. Shit! The posse had been talking on some other channel to keep me from hearing them. That one guy screwed up. So now I knew they'd seen the explosion. They were close. I waited for the second explosion, but it never came. When I got brave enough, I peeked around my rock to see one harvester still unharmed. "What the fu—" I began, but then I saw it. The survivor was pocked with superficial damage from the other harvester's explosion. My jumper had been severed cleanly in half by a piece of shrapnel. The 2 ends hung from their poles. The battery wasn't shorted anymore, and it hadn't had time to get hot enough to touch off the explosion. I spotted a glint of light across the harvesting zone. The EVA masters had come. I looked back at the remaining harvester. 15 meters of ground to cross to get back to it, plus however long it would take me to fix the jumper. Then I looked at the glint again, now identifiable as a rover, just 100 meters away and coming at me fast. I wouldn't make it. They'd be on me in a shot. I had to leave the one harvester behind. Shit, I said. I knew it was the right decision, but that didn't mean I had to like it. I fled the crime scene. Minor problem with running away from people on the moon. Your footprints are very obvious. I beelined out of the collection zone and left a blatant trail any idiot could follow. No way around that. The whole area had long since been cleared of everything but dust. Once I got into natural terrain, I had options. The highlands are riddled with everything from pebbles to boulders. I stepped onto a rock and jumped to the next rock over. Then I jumped to the next one, and so on. I continued my high-stakes game of the floor is lava for the next 20 minutes. I never had to touch the dusty ground at all. Try following that trail, Bob. The next bit was equal parts boring and stressful. I had several kilometers to cover, all the while looking over my shoulder. It wouldn't take the posse long to figure out I was headed home. Then they'd hop in their rover and catch up to me. They'd drive along the shortest route home, I hoped, so I took a roundabout path. Nothing resembling a straight line. Artemis was only 3 kilometers away from the collection zone, but I walked 5 kilometers on my crazy circuitous route. The rocky landscape of the foothills provided lots of boulders and berms to block any direct line of sight to me. It worked. I don't know what route the posse took, but they never got eyes on me. I finally reached the base of the Moltke foothills. The sea of tranquility stretched all the way to the horizon. Artemis shined in the extreme distance, probably a good 2 kilometers away. I suppressed the queasy feelings that came with realizing how isolated I was. No time for that shit right now. I needed a new strategy. I couldn't hopscotch my way any farther. A vast field of gray powder separated me from home. Not only would I leave a trail, I'd be visible for kilometers around. Time for a rest. For the moment, at least, I wasn't out in the open. I found a suitable boulder and sat in the shade. I turned off all my LEDs, even the ones in the helmet, and covered my arm readouts with tape. Shadows on the moon are stark and black. No air means no light diffusion. But I wasn't in total darkness. Sunlight reflected off nearby rocks, dirt, hills, and so on. And some of that snuck around to hit me. Still, I was functionally invisible compared to the shine of the landscape. I turned my head to the water nipple and slurped down a good half liter. EVAs are a sweaty business. Good thing I'd taken a break. 5 minutes into my rest, I spotted the posse driving back to town. They were a fair distance away from me, on the straight-line course to the city. The rover, designed for 4 passengers, had 7 EVA masters piled on it. It looked like a clown car speeding across the flatlands. Judging by the rooster tail of dust it kicked up, they were moving as fast as they could. At that speed, on the bumpy terrain, they'd have no chance of spotting me. What the hell were they thinking? Aw, fuck, I said. They didn't need to find me. They just needed to beat me back to town. Then they could guard every airlock. Eventually, I'd run out of air and have to surrender. Shit. Damn. Crap. Ass. Son of a bitch. It's important to vary your profanities. If you use the same one too often, it loses its strength. I fumed in my suit for a minute more, then calmed down and got to scheming. Okay, this sucked. But it came with advantages. They would beat me to town, fine. But that meant they wouldn't be patrolling for me in Tranquility. I'd been stressing out about how to sneak across the flatlands, but now that wasn't a problem. I stood up, turned my LEDs back on, and pulled the tape off my arm readouts. There'd be an EVA master on the lookout at every airlock, and they wouldn't just be hanging around inside. They'd be outside, where they could see me coming and sound the alarm. I had a plan, but first I had to get next to the city itself. That was step one. Conrad's airlock faced north. The Tranquility Bay Company's freight airlock in Bean faced northwest. The port of entry in Aldrin faced east, and the ISRO's airlock in Armstrong faced southeast. So the biggest blind spot in their coverage would be the southwest. I bounced along the gray nothingness for an hour, taking a wide circular course so as to approach from the right direction. I kept my eyes out for trouble as the domes of home grew on the horizon. The last 100 meters were pure stress. Once I entered the shadow of Shepherd Bubble, I felt a lot safer. I'd be hard to spot in the darkness. Finally, I leaned against Shepherd's Hall and breathed a sigh of relief. Okay, I'd made it to town. Now the trick was getting in. I couldn't walk the perimeter of town to get where I needed to be. I'd be spotted for sure. Time to make like Hibby and use those maintenance handholds. The handholds had been designed with EVA suits in mind, the perfect width for grabbing with giant gloves. It only took me 10 minutes to climb the arc of the sphere. I hunkered down once I got to the peak. Not because I was worried about EVA masters. They'd all be too close to other bubbles to get eyes on me. No. My problem was basic geography. Shepherd and Aldrin are separated only by Armstrong, and Armstrong is only half their height, so right that moment, anyone in Aldrin Park would be able to see me. It was still pretty early in the morning, so hopefully there wouldn't be too many park visitors. Plus, anyone who did see me would probably assume I was a maintenance worker doing her job. Still, I was perpetrating a caper, and preferred not to be noticed. I climbed down the other side of Shepherd and onto the connector tunnel between it and Armstrong. It wasn't exactly gymnastics. The tunnel is 3 meters wide. Once I made it to Armstrong Bubble, I climbed over it too. Thanks to Armstrong's smaller size, it went considerably faster than my Shepherd climb. Then I catwalked across the Armstrong-Aldrin connector. Aldrin was more of a challenge. I climbed up part of the way, but couldn't go to the peak. Well, I could, but I shouldn't. It's one thing to wander around on a bubble hull, but if I climbed on the glass of Aldrin Park right in front of people's faces, it would raise a few eyebrows. Mommy, why is Spider-Man on the moon? No thanks. Instead, I stopped climbing halfway up, just below the glass panels, and moved sideways, shimmying from handle to handle and working my way around the bubble. Soon, the port of entry came into view. Closest to me was the rail antechamber where train cars docked with the port. No train there at the moment, though. Next to that was the huge circular door to the freight airlock. Bob Lewis stepped out of the train alcove. "Oh, shit," I said. I'd been so careful coming around the Arc of Aldrin. I'd moved slowly to make sure I'd see any EVA master before he could see me. But I didn't know Bob was inside the damn alcove. "That's cheating, Bob." He was doing rounds. Once a Marine, always a Marine. He hadn't looked up yet, but he would soon. I had a second, maybe two, to react. I let go of the handles and slid down the dome. I tried to aim my feet at the ground. Maybe if I landed just right, I could control the impact. But no, I'm not graceful. I got the worst of both worlds. I hit the ground hard and completely off balance. I landed like a sack of shit, but I landed on the other side of the alcove and didn't break anything. Good thing sound doesn't travel in a vacuum, because Bob surely would have heard that landing. Whatever. A clumsy, awkward success is still a success. I hugged the wall of Aldrin and crept away from the port until I couldn't see Bob anymore. I wasn't sure where his patrol route would take him, but I knew he wouldn't stray far from the port's airlock. I continued until I was well clear of the port and sat down with my back against the bubble. Then I waited. I couldn't see the train alcove from my new position, but I could see the tracks leading away from town. The train appeared on the horizon half an hour later. Owing to the small size of the moon, our horizon is only 2.5 kilometers away, so I didn't have long before it arrived at the station. I waited for the train to pull into the alcove and dock with the port. Then I crept along my side of the alcove. This was the first train of the day. Most of the passengers would be employees of the visitor center itself. They loaded up quickly, and the train was ready for its return trip. It emerged from the alcove. It takes a while to get something that size up to speed, so it wasn't going very fast yet. I leapt forward and grabbed the front wheel housing. It wasn't the best grip, but I held on with all my might. The train dragged me along, my legs bouncing off the terrain. Okay, maybe this wasn't the best plan I'd ever concocted, but it kept a train between me and Bob, which was all I wanted. The train accelerated faster and faster. I hung on for dear life. At this speed, any sharp rock could puncture my suit. I couldn't let myself dangle for the whole trip. I had to put my legs somewhere. I reached up and grabbed the edge of a window. I had to hope no one was sitting there. I pulled myself up and put my feet on the wheel housing. I wanted to peek through the window to see if I'd been spotted, but I resisted the urge. People might not notice a few fingers outside a window, but they'd probably notice a big EVA suit helmet. I tried not to move. It'd be pretty spooky for people in the train if they heard noise coming from the wall from outside. "Attack of the Moon Woman who made bad life decisions!" We puttered along the lazy path toward the visitor center. By now, you've probably figured out my plan. The posse was guarding all the Artemis airlocks. But had they thought to guard the one at the visitor center? Even if they had, they couldn't beat me there. This was the first train. The trip took 40 minutes, as usual. I managed to sit sort of comfortably on the wheel housing. It wasn't too bad. I spent the trip brooding about my predicament. Even if I could make it back inside without getting caught, I was screwed. Tron had hired me to destroy 4 harvesters. I only trashed 3. Sanchez's engineers would undo my sabotage to the survivor and get it back to work. Their production would be reduced, but they'd still make their oxygen quota. Tron wouldn't pay me for this debacle, and I wouldn't blame him. Not only had I failed, I'd made things harder on him. Now Sanchez Aluminum knew someone was gunning for them. "Damn," I said as my stomach knotted up. The train slowed as it approached the visitor center. I hopped off and stumbled to a stop while the train continued on to its alcove. I bounded over to the visitor center and worked my way along the arc of its dome. The eagle came into view as I rounded the hull. It almost seemed to disapprove. Tisk, tisk, my crew would never pull shit like this. Then I saw a glorious sight. the EVA airlock was completely unguarded.
Hell yeah!
I rushed to the airlock and opened the outer door, hopped in, and closed the hatch behind me. I cranked the repress valve and heard the hiss of glorious air come at me from all directions. Even though I was in a hurry, I waded through the air cleanse. Hey, I may be a smuggler, saboteur, and all-around asshole, but I'd never leave my EVA suit dirty. The cleanse finished, and I was clean as a whistle. Back in town. I'd have to find somewhere in the visitor center to hide my EVA gear, but that wouldn't be a problem. I'd stow it in as many tourist lockers as it took, then come back later with a big container. I'm a porter. I'd just say I was there for a pickup. It wouldn't even look weird. I opened the inner airlock door and stepped into salvation. Except it wasn't salvation. It was shit. I stepped into shit. The smile on my face quickly changed to a freshly caught carp expression. Dale stood in the antechamber, his arms folded and a half smirk on his face.
Dear Jazz, are you all right? I've been worried. I haven't heard from you in a couple of weeks.
Dear Kelvin, sorry, I had to shut off my gizmo service for a while to save money. I've got it back on now. It's been tough, but I'm starting to get above water. I made a new friend. Every now and then, I scrape together enough money to get a beer at this hole in the wall in Conrad. I know it's stupid to spend money on booze when you're homeless, but booze makes homelessness bearable. Anyway, there's a regular there named Dale. He's an EVA master, mostly working out of the Apollo 11 Visitor Center. He does tourist EVAs, stuff like that. We got to talking, and I don't know why, but I ended up telling him my problems. He was shocked at my fucked up situation and offered to lend me some money. I assumed it was a play to get in my pants, so I turned him down. I don't have a problem with prostitutes, but I don't want to be one. But he swore up and down that he just wanted to help me out as a friend. Accepting that money was the hardest thing I've ever done, Kelvin. But I was out of options. Anyway, I had just enough to pay deposit and first month in a capsule domicile. It's so small, I have to step outside to change my mind. Rimshot. But at least it's a home. And true to his word, Dale never expected anything in return. Perfect gentleman. And, believe it or not, I'm even dating a guy. His name is Tyler. It's early days, but he's really sweet. He's kind of shy, polite to everyone, and sort of a boy scout when it comes to rules. So the opposite of me in every way. But we really click. We'll see how it goes. You know what? I've been selfish lately. I've been so focused on me, I didn't even ask about you. How are you handling things?
Dear Jazz, good for you. I was worried your experience with Sean would put you off men forever. See? We're not all bad. I have my job at KSC, for which I'm very grateful. I even got a promotion. I'm a loadmaster in training now. In a couple months, I'll be a full loadmaster and I'll get a raise. Halima is 6 months pregnant now, and we're all preparing for the baby. We've worked out a rotation so that my other sisters can take care of the baby while Halima stays in school. Mom, Dad, and I will keep working. Dad was almost ready to retire, but now he'll have to work another 5 years at least. What choice do we have? There's just not enough money otherwise.
Dear Kelvin, you're a loadmaster in training? Does that mean you sometimes set up cargo pods unsupervised? Because there are a lot of people in Artemis who smoke.
Dear Jazz, I'm listening.
Chapter 7. I stared at Dale like he'd grown a dick out of his forehead.
How?
What else would you do? He took the helmet from my unresisting hands. You had to know the posse would cover all the Artemis's entrances. That just leaves the visitor center. Why aren't you with the posse? I am with the posse. I'm the guy who volunteered to guard the visitor center. I would have been here sooner, but this was the first train out. Given the timing, I'm guessing we caught the same ride. Shit. Some criminal mastermind I was. Dale set my helmet on a bench, then took my hand and unclamped the seals on the glove. He rotated the glove at the wrist and pulled it off. You went too far this time, Jez. Way too far. You're going to lecture me on morality? He shook his head. Are you ever going to let that go? Why should I? He rolled his eyes. Tyler's gay, Jazz. Gay as Oscar Wilde wearing sequins walking a pink poodle with a tiara on his head. The poodle has a tiara? No, I meant Oscar Wilde. Right. That makes more sense. Anyway, fuck you. Dale groaned. It was never going to work for you two. Never. And that makes it okay for you to fuck my boyfriend? No, he said softly. He took my other glove off and sat it on the bench. We shouldn't have been screwing while you two were still together. I was in love, and he was confused. But that doesn't make it okay. It was wrong. I looked away. But you still did it. Yeah, I did. I betrayed my best friend. If you think that doesn't kill me inside, you really don't know me. Poor you. He scowled. I didn't recruit him, you know. If I weren't there, he would have left you on his own. He'd never be happy with a woman. It has nothing to do with you. You know that, right? I didn't respond. He was right, but I was in no mood to hear it. He gestured for me to turn around. I did as instructed, and he detached my life support pack. Don't you want to tell your EVA buddies you caught me? He carefully set the pack on the bench. This is a big deal, Jazz. It's not just an ass beating. You could get deported. You blew up Sanchez Aluminum's harvesters. Why the hell did you do that? What do you care? I still care about you, Jazz. You were my best friend for years. I don't regret falling in love with Tyler. But I know I did wrong. Thanks, I said. When I can't sleep at night because I know you're nailing the only man I ever loved, I'll just remember that you feel guilty. All better. It's been a year. When does your victimhood expire? Fuck you. He leaned against the wall and stared at the ceiling. Jazz, give me a reason not to call the EVA posse. Anything. I forced some logic through the swirling vortex of anger in my brain. I had to be a big girl. Just for a minute. I didn't have to like it, but I had to do it. I'll give you 100,000 slugs. I didn't have 100,000 slugs, but I'd get it if I could trash that last harvester. He raised his brow. Okay, that's a pretty good reason. What the hell is going on? I shook my head. No questions. Are you in trouble? That's a question. Fine. He folded his arms. What about the posse? Do they know it's me? No. Then you don't have to do anything. Just forget you saw me here. Jazz, there are only 40 people in the whole city who have EVA suits. It's a small pool to investigate. And the EVA masters will definitely investigate. Not to mention Rudy. I have contingencies for that. All you have to do is keep your mouth shut. He mulled it over. Then he flashed a smile. Keep your 100,000. I want something else. I want to be friends again. 150,000, I countered. One evening a week, you and me at Hartnell's. Just like the old days. No, I said. Either take my money or feed me to the EVA mob. Jazz, I'm trying to play ball here, but you don't get to jerk me around. I don't want money. I want to reconnect. Take it or leave it. I began, but I suppressed the yuck you in my throat. I found a limit to my pride somewhere in there. He could destroy my life with a gizmo call. I had no choice. Fine, I finished. Once a week. Doesn't mean we're friends, though. He heaved a sigh of relief. Thank God. I didn't want to ruin you. You already ruined me. He winced at the barb. Good. He pulled out his gizmo and dialed. Bob, you still out there? Okay, I'm just checking in. I'm at the visitor center and just suiting up now. Yeah, I got the first train in. I searched the whole center. No one's here but me and a couple of workers starting their day. He listened on the gizmo for some time, then said, All right, I'll be outside in 15 minutes. Okay, I'll radio when I'm outside. He hung up. Well, I'm off to search for the mysterious saboteur. Have fun with that, I said. Tuesday, 8 p.m. at Hartnell's. All right, I mumbled. I finished getting out of my suit with Dale's assistance. Then I helped Dale into his. When I got home, I flopped onto my back. Good God, I was exhausted. Even my shitty coffin seemed comfortable. I pulled my gizmo out of the alibio mat. I checked the web and email history. The device had done its job. I sighed in relief. I'd gotten away with it. Sort of. I could expect some questions from Rudy and the guild, but I had my story straight. There was a message on the gizmo from Trond. That last delivery you made was missing an item. I messaged back, apologies for the delay, I'm working on how to get that last package to you now. Understood. I needed a plan for that last harvester before I talked to Trond again. But what the hell could I do? Time for another scheme. No idea what form it would take, but I had to think of something. Next thing I knew, I woke up from an unscheduled nap. I still had my shoes on and the gizmo in my hand. The day's exhaustion and previous night's shitty sleep had caught up with me, I guess. I checked the time and discovered I'd been asleep 4 hours. Well, at least I was rested. I walked laps around Conrad ground for almost an hour. It wasn't for my health. I needed to get into the Conrad airlock's antechamber without being spotted. The Hib was still in a locker in that antechamber. I'd promised Joka I'd return it to her within 2 days, and that deadline was fast approaching. But every time I passed the damn airlock, somebody was nearby, so I just kept walking. I also wanted to steer clear of the EVA guild for a bit. They'd given up the search after 5 hours. Right about now, they'd be investigating anyone who had access to an EVA suit. I had my gizmo activity as an alibi, but I preferred not to answer questions at all. Best not to interact with the folks near the airlock. After 4 entire laps, I finally caught a window where no one was around. I darted in, waved my gizmo to open the locker, grabbed the Hib and its remote, then got the hell out of there. I had a smug little smile on my face as I headed out of the antechamber. The perfect crime. Then I walked right into Rudy. It was like walking into a brick wall. Well, not quite. If you get going fast enough, you might actually damage a brick wall. I dropped the Hib case because I'm a clumsy oaf. Rudy watched it fall for a moment, then casually plucked it out of the air. Good afternoon, Jazz, he said. I've been looking for you. You'll never take me alive, copper, I said. He looked at the case. Is this a hull inspection bot? Why would you need one of these? Feminine hygiene? Oh, you wouldn't understand. He handed it back to me. We need to talk. I put Hibby under my arm. Ever heard of gizmos? You can talk to people from anywhere. I suspect you wouldn't answer if I called. Oh, you know how it is, I said. I get all flustered when a handsome boy calls. Anyway, nice talking to you. I walked on. I expected him to grab my arm or something, but he just kept pace beside me. You know why I'm here, right? No idea, I said. Is it something Canadian? Do you need to apologize for shit that isn't your fault? Or hold a door open for someone 20 meters away? I assume you heard about the Sanchez harvesters. You mean that top news story on every local website? Yeah, I heard about it. He clasped his hands behind his back. Did you do it? I put on my best shocked expression. Why would I do something like that? That was going to be my follow-up question, he said. Has someone accused me? He shook his head. No, but I pay attention to what's going on in my city. You have an EVA suit, and you're a criminal. Seemed like a good place to start my investigation. I was in my coffin all night, I said. Check my gizmo activity if you don't believe me. I hereby give you permission to check that out, just to save you the trouble of getting Administrator Ngugi to authorize it. I'll take you up on that, he said. I've also had a request from Bob Lewis of the EVA Guild. He wants last night's location info for everyone who owns an EVA suit. Do you give permission for me to give him your data? Yes. Go ahead. That should put things to rest. Maybe for Bob, he said. But I'm something of a suspicious soul. Just because your gizmo was in your coffin all night, that doesn't mean you were. Have you got any witnesses? No. Contrary to popular belief, I usually sleep alone. He raised an eyebrow. Sanchez Aluminum is angry. The EVA Guild is upset too. Not my problem. I rounded a corner without warning to throw him off, but he kept up. He must have known I was going to do that. Dick.
Tell you what, he pulled out his gizmo. I'll pay you 100 slugs to tell me the truth. What?